Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday, the 29th of April. Very nice to have you with us. It is a beautiful day here in Albany. Hopefully it is where you are. And if not, well, we'll make it beautiful.
We will.
Sure, we will. We have that power. Let me introduce the panel that is full of that beauty. We begin with Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome back, Big Joe.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful to have you here.
Very nice to be here. We also, our dear friend, Rosemary Armeo, is here, the head of the journalism program, director of the journalism program at UAlbany.
Hello.
Very nice to have you here as well. And Barbara Smith, who is a writer and activist and joins us each and every Friday, and we're thrilled to have her back.
Nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
And to hear everybody.
Well, it's good to have you here. Let's get in. Well, first of all, we'll remind people of what they can do to be a part of the fun and frivolity, in case you've forgotten. It's roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we will go through your letters in a little bit. We'd love to hear what is on your mind as we try to figure out what is happening in this wild world of ours. So let's begin with the Ted Cruz story, just because I like it.
Me too. I can't get enough of it.
So Ted Cruz, so he's in the fight of his life, right? He needs Indiana. And if there is a last gasp in the Stop Trump movement, it is Indiana. He needs Indiana. He has to win Indiana. Here's the problem. Everybody hates him. So now John Boehner, who is at Stanford yesterday, says, well, he's Lucifer in the flesh.
Sounds like something I'd say.
I thought the first report was that he was the spawn of Lucifer, but no, they've got it right now.
Yeah, it was Lucifer in the flesh, and not I'm trying to bring up the
worst SOB I ever worked
for. Yes,
that was my favorite part.
And it went on. I mean, it was obviously very damning in its
the very wording
direction of of him, and also what it illustrated was why he's having the problems he's having, because and then they just give this laundry list of things that he had done to not destruct the Democrats, but complete destruction within the Republican Party and the Republican leadership over his brief tenure as a senator. So they look at this, and then I know you all talked about this yesterday, but then the pick with Carly Fiorina, and which I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. By the way, lovely singing voice. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, that was great.
I have no idea what you're referring to.
Oh, during her speech, her acceptance speech of Cruz's invitation to be his running mate, she was talking about his daughters, about Cruz's daughters, and how she has gotten to know them, and then she launched into a little song.
Amazing.
It was really weird.
Completely and utterly weird.
It was weird. And the only cool thing about it was that it made Ted Cruz seem somewhat normal for that moment. So
Republicans have such a nice tradition of wacko women VP candidates.
Now they do.
She fits right in.
Now they do.
Yes, well, with Sarah and now
that's
this.
What I'm saying, because tradition has to have more than one iteration. So now they have a tradition.
It's becoming like a trend. Yeah, I want her to sing to us. Alan, I want to ask you about the comments from the ex-speaker. Do you think they were planned and timed?
No. I think he was just sort of having fun. He was there. He knew he had a young audience, and he decided he would give them a little something. But what is great is that maybe they weren't planned, but it certainly was what he was feeling. Now, of course, Cruz comes back, and he doesn't know quite what to say And he sort of says, "Well, I didn't really see, I didn't really know him that much, and I didn't really have FaceTime with him. So how can I be the worst guy that he's ever had to deal with?" Yeah. In other words, I think he was completely, Cruz was completely nonplussed by this. But then they go to Jeb Bush. And they say, "Jeb, who are you supporting?" And he says, "I'm supporting Cruz."
Yeah.
How come? Well, because we all know why. He hates the other guy even more. He hates Trump even more.
And that seems to be the thing of the division of the hatred, yeah. sort of where you go within the party. So then there was the and again I know you talked about this too yesterday, but there was the once they came up with the alliance that the right. two that Kasich and Cruz would have an alliance. Then last night Cruz said that he would
nice show, nice.
Thank you. That he would then. But he knew nothing of the alliance. He said there is no alliance, that it was created by the media. And meanwhile, the media turns around and says, "Well, here are the press releases you sent out." And he said, no, that's not what happened. Kasich decided he wasn't going to give Indiana a shot, and he wants me to do it. There was no alliance. And everyone is like, "Well, all right, you're just lying." And it doesn't really seem to matter to him anyway. So that is that's been interesting to watch as well.
Kasich sent out a tweet right after that. Minutes later, Kasich's strategist, John Weaver, dispatched a cryptic tweet: "I can't stand liars."
Wow. Wow. Well, the chutzpah in this, the chutzpah factor in this is that they think that their voters are so obedient that they will do whatever they tell them. Are you following me? In other
yes.
words, they're saying, "Okay, I'm out from Indiana." One guy says, "I'm out from Indiana. I expect all my vassals to be out also." Well, these people don't understand that kind of language. That's crazy.
Well, I'm not sure if they're ordering them. They see themselves in alignment with their followers saying, "Okay, guys, this is what we're going to do." It's that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
But it is amazing to me how Cruz at this point seems to be damaging himself. He's not mm-hmm. just losing anymore. He's hurting his chances in the future.
I mean, he's ruining his political
Correct.
Career.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's being called a liar. He looks like the ex-Speaker of the House. I mean, unless it's Dennis Hastings, who cares what he says about you. But he gets just this damning characterization by Boehner. He needs to be thinking about maybe wrapping it up, too. I don't see where he sees this path to victory.
Well, I think after Indiana...
About.
You know,
you think that's it?
Hopefully. Well, I'm not sure if that's what the campaign will decide, but it just makes it a whole lot more difficult to.
He's way
be
behind.
To be a plausible candidate.
Yeah, he is way behind if polls are to be believed in Indiana.
All three Republican candidates are spending the day in California today. The state Republican committee is having their convention, and all three candidates are speaking in California. And so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. And then the campaigning will then go back to Indiana.
Well, speaking of which, this came in too late, I think, for our articles that were sent yesterday evening. But there was violence at the Trump rally
in California.
That was primarily Latinos and Latinas protesting his terrible remarks and policies.
Oh, when I turned it off, Barbara, he was saying, "Oh, I see the signs out there say Latinos love Trump. I love that." Guess it didn't work out, huh?
You know what else he did? He had people inside the rally come on the stage whose children or other family members had been killed by illegal people who were not documented. Nobody's illegal. You know, no
right.
person is illegal. But he had people come on stage whose family members had been killed by people who were undocumented. It was just like, oh my goodness. It was, and they had signs and pictures of their loved ones. He is fanning the flames so profoundly of bigotry.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to some of the letters. We've got a lot of letters coming in, and we'll talk more about politics, and then we'll change the subject to some other stuff. more politics.
Sure, sure.
We'll. Oh, you don't trust me. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Nine Pin Cider Works, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Sunday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary. Consider the apple. NinePinCider.com. CIA Security Systems, licensed security and fire detection systems with or without a landline, 24/7 local monitoring for commercial, weekend, and full-time residential customers. CIASecurity.com. And Traditions Linens Factory Outlet, Claverick. Finds from the factory for bed, bath, and home, plus spring collections in natural fibers. TraditionsLinens.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Barbara Smith making up the group this morning. And we go to a few letters before our bottom of the hour news break.
Okay. I just want to caution everybody, if I may, Joe, that there are limits. I mean, you know, we want to keep this balanced and we want to make sure everybody gets a chance to come in and we want to hear from everybody. So sometimes this is beginning to look like the comments at the end of an article. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So let's be careful here. Okay. Tony says, these statements of late from Cruz concerning Boehner, et cetera, were also just bolstering the Trump moniker of Lion Ted. What is he thinking? Mike says, Donald Trump may be a loose campaign and his views may all be all over the board. That's the good news. However, with Ted Cruz, I fear him more than Trump, all things relative, because Cruz believes most of what he says, especially his views on social issues. I think Cruz is quoted as saying, I'm a Christian first, an American second, a conservative third. This is a far cry from John Kennedy's speech before the ministers in Houston in 1960. But I take some issue with this letter. I'll tell you why, Mike. Because how do you know what he believes? How do you know that this isn't the way that he thinks he can capture the conservative vote, which turns out in a primary? We don't know what somebody believes. We only know what they say they believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Okay.
Journalism 101 lesson, isn't it?
Yep.
It is, and I've often said that to my students, you know, on the Legislative Gazette and other places, you know, what are you talking about? You know, you say he believes that. You don't know what he believes. You only know what he says, okay? Mm-hmm. Lee says, Dr. Chartok, I'm surprised you can talk today after biting your tongue so often during your interview with Republican Chairman Cox on the Capitol Connection yesterday. I like Cox. I don't agree with him, but I like him. Is that possible?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Michael says, best thing about Cruz's pick of Fiorina, we can loathe them both at the same time. I realize there are bigger... What'd you say?
I'm sorry. I was just.
I had a quizzical look at that. Like what?
No, the word was low. Yeah, you said it. We were just. Rosemary okay. Didn't catch it. That's all right.
Okay. James said, Trump, the unasked question. I realize there are bigger issues about Trump, but I find it odd that in the interviews of Trump that I've seen, no one asks what is to me an obvious question. Why do you have that ridiculous contrived comb over? You know, the whole thing here is that the American people tend to not be terribly educated about politics and to get concerned about things like the comb over. You know, I mean, that is, well, anyway, Jay says, better the Lucifer you know than the devil you don't. Mattman says, this is just in California, Trump promises the wild three future cabinet positions, then loses key to coat closet. They're locked into today. Anybody get that one?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
That's four of us.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Lewis says, hi, panel. For the past week or so, we've noticed the video cam has the audio not in sync with the mouth movements of the speakers. It did not used to be this way. Is this permanent or can it be fixed?
I think we just need to talk faster.
To catch up.
We'll catch up with our... With our mouth moving.
Okay.
YouTube
okay.
has a lot of fun with that. They put in the, you know, sounds
yes, right.
that match. That could be fun.
Oh, okay. Come on. What a ticket, says Peter. The Witch Finder General and the Corporate Hatchet Lady. Peter. Paul Murphy says, hello, panel. Quick story. I was in business conference a little more than a week ago in Florida. I met former Congressman Boehner, and we chatted for a few moments. He was lovely to chat with, and he told us the Lucifer story about Mr. Cruz, word for word, at Stanford, and then some. I thought he just said it yesterday.
He was practicing.
Well, maybe he was just publicly saying what he's been saying privately for a long time.
Yeah. It was, except that it says here, I see, word for as at Stanford. He was also frustrated by the Cruz Tea Party damage to the Congress. Although I'm a Democrat, it was a special conversation. Okay, and now Carly Fiorina is to secure California. Okay, that's what they think they're doing there. Ted Cruz, see, I don't like this kind of language, is an insufferable jerk, and he's to the right of Darth Vader. The only reason he's gotten as much support as he has is that he isn't Donald Trump. It has little to do with support for his ideas. That's Peter, a new pulse. And like that. And then we heard from our wonderful volunteer, Carol Lapani. A little off topic, Joe, but did I hear the episode of Silence yesterday from NPR was result of a child's errant finger during a Take Your Child to Work visit? Love you guys. Love the show. See you in June.
All right. Comments, no. I did not hear that story, so I don't know.
Me neither. David says, we already talked to him. Okay. All right. And I think, unless you see something else, Joe.
I think you got it. Which is in perfect timing. So that'll give us time to go to a news break and get some underwriting and all that good stuff and give folks a chance to check. And if they want to check in, they can write to us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We will be right back with more program. Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel. Our panel discussion, as we say, not our panel, that's in Vermont. No, our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us, and we will move on to other things and talk about other news stories. I do want to talk, and as I said earlier, this is not quite off the topic, but I do want to talk about the women's card, if I may. This has been talked about a lot. There was an interesting article in the New York Times yesterday about what the women's card is worth. As Donald Trump turns his attention to Hillary Clinton, he's trying out new attack lines. The only card she has is the women's card. If Hillary Clinton were a man, I don't think she would get 5% of the vote. In his telling, the women's card confers an enormous advantage. Indeed, current head-to-head polls show Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Trump have her with 55% of the two-party vote, suggesting that he believes the women's card is worth 50 points. That's nearly enough to assure any female candidate a victory. Yet this appears to be inconsistent with available data. Over the past decade, women have been elected to 17.5% of House seats, meaning that they're outnumbered by men by roughly 5-1. In fact, the women's card appears to be particularly unhelpful in the United States. Women's success in politics, at least measured by the proportion of seats they hold in the House compared with the equivalent lower chambers in other nations, ranks below that of nearly every other rich country. The United States is positioned between Greece and Bangladesh. So while it is initially amusing to look at the New York Times bringing up things like facts when it comes to something that Donald Trump has said, I did find this particular line extremely revealing.
Want to take the first shot, Barb?
Which line are you speaking of?
Well, this overall idea of 17.5% of women have been elected over the past decade. Women have been elected 17.5% of House seats, outnumbered by men roughly 5-1. So what is the women's card worth when Donald Trump is saying that if she were playing the women card, what is that actually worth in an election?
So the reason I had to ask is because I was looking for that chart that they had of all of the percentages of women in office in countries all over the world. For whatever reason, I can't find it.
Right oh, I now. Have it here.
I saw it last night. I was able to look at it last
night. Rwanda is 57. They're the highest at 57.1. And
it's because all the men are dead in Rwanda.
We're at 17.5. And then, of course, you go down to... Romania, Thailand, Liberia.
Right, and I just found it, and it was just fascinating to me. I think it was just my phone not picking up. I turned to Wi-Fi, and I got it. But in any event, it's just fascinating to me the countries that are ahead of us, and it just shows that despite our image of being the most advanced country in the world, particularly our, in this case, particularly around women's issues, it's obviously not the case.
Yeah. I think the places where women have done well is there's been legislative or mandated quotas. Mm-hmm. And you have a certain percentage, for example, in Tunisia, a certain percentage of the parliament must be women. Mm-hmm. But when Trump talks about the card, I don't think he's talking about overall parity in the political system. He's talking about when you have a man paired against a woman in a race and the woman has an advantage. And that those are completely different numbers. I think the Times mixed up stuff there. Oh. Women have not fully participated in the American system. And so, a lot of that is sexism. A lot of that is it's really hard to raise a family and also have a career in politics, so they don't go into it. I think there's all kinds of reasons, and it doesn't have to do with whether Hillary is a woman and people are going to vote or not vote for her because she's a woman. My question is, why did he start a gender war? What does he see as the advantage? Right out of this huge victory he had that night, it really does, I think, give him the nomination. Why does he start a fight with women?
With the one group that is, go ahead, Alan.
No, you. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, with the one group that he has the biggest trouble with. I mean, in every
single, problems with many groups.
Yes,
but that
he
is
does.
A
but
big
in the polls and every exit poll from the start of his campaign, the one consistent thing in the Trump and in the quest in the 30-40 states that have voted so far is the abysmal support that he has amongst women.
Let's try to remember, folks, that this is a primary campaign that he's going through. He is talking to the, I believe, primarily men, right-wing people who he has to appeal to in order to win big, and especially in California now, where he really does. If he does it, then he's over the top. So I think the explanation is this is not yet the general campaign, and we know a lot about Trump. And that is that Trump will stand up and he'll say anything at any time. And he'll change his tune when he needs to in order to capture that next election. By the way, Joe and Rosemary and Barbara, we got a letter saying that we have on occasion said that Trump could win the election. How dare we, basically?
Anybody can win any election until day of.
They're on the ballot,
right.
They can win.
We do not know,
That's right. And not only that, think of all those people who said, this guy's a joke. He's a big fat joke, and he's not with funny hair, and he's a fool, and he's a clown. And yet, here he is. And
he is capturing a big middle step class. Closer than he was. You're all right.
A lot of middle class in this country. People played him off, basically wrote him off earlier. And I'm saying this guy could win.
But, Alan, I have to say, I really like thinking that Trump is just a jerk when he goes after women compared to what you said, which is that it's a calculated move to win votes by being anti-woman, by saying horrible things about women.
Well, it does make sense, Bob.
And what are we going to do, all forget about this in the general election?
Yes.
Okay, so
you will. It's not you. Listen, you guys are brilliant, wonderful people. But it's not you that is at stake here. It is the American middle class, which we know doesn't know a lot about a lot. And I want to remind you
both. The middle class is misogynist? Is that what you're saying?
I think there's certainly a certain amount of that. And I hear that from my feminist friends a lot.
Well, what I was going to say is that, if you talk about your potential candidate in the general, then you're in the general. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, they've already moved.
We're in the primary period. But the thing is,
He and Hillary, too. They're both talking at each other.
Yes, I understand where you guys are coming from. I love and adore you all. But I am telling you now on this, I think you're wrong. Remember what I said is that he is appealing to the right wing group in California that will either elect him and put him over the top or not. So in order to see this, you have to understand he is not going after Hillary now because it's the general election. He's going after her because she's an anathema to the people who are going to vote or not vote in the California Republican primary.
Well, then you go after Hillary. You don't go after women as a group, which is what he has consistently done.
Well, I told you why.
Now, there's an article in today's New York Times about this very topic. This is the headline is Donald Trump's gender-based attacks on Hillary Clinton have calculated risk. And one of the paragraphs says, Mr. Trump's advisors, meanwhile, say that the woman's card attack serves to undermine Mrs. Clinton by sowing doubts about her qualifications, not just with men, but with white women who has supported the Republican nominee in every election since 1996 and are vital to Mr. Trump's chances in November. I just say, look at the footage of his victory on Tuesday night, his victory event on Tuesday night, the expression on what's-his-name's Governor Christie's wife's face.
Oh, I mean,
it's
just
like, it was the greatest.
Yeah, it's like she's a Republican woman married to a conservative Republican. And when he got into that woman's
card, she rolled her eyes.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
you know.
And dare I remind you all of the ERA and the fact that there were plenty of white and other women, well, mostly white middle-class women who voted against that because they wanted, their perception was it was dangerous for their status.
Women are not a bloc. They do not all think alike. Many of them are wrong-thinking in my point of view, and that has nothing to do with gender. It has to do with, you know, the way you're raised,
your
the
politics.
Way you think.
Politics.
Yeah, the politics. But I would just like to say that this, to me, is reason 189 why Hillary Clinton cannot do anything right. 2008, she was roundly criticized for acting like a man, not bringing up the fact that she was running as possibly the first woman president. And that was seen as somehow duplicitous. And now that she is bringing it up, much more than she did in 2008, possibly because she can say with accuracy she is the most experienced and qualified candidate, vote for her for reasons other than gender, she's still getting knocked. Now she's playing the woman's card. It's a very difficult position.
And John wrote in, who is always bright, said, yes, America is misogynistic. That was what John wrote. Thought I'd mention that.
I think that what Rosemary was saying is like, are middle class people in the United States more sexist, misogynistic than other groups? And I think she was saying probably not.
I'm thinking no.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, you can't really do stereotyping in broad swaths of.
So if I'm understanding you, Alan, you're saying that. So he's saying whatever he needs to say to win, and then come the general election, he'll say something else, and people will believe him.
Well, that is his history. His history is to turn around and say anything he wants at any time. The other day, I heard him say, you know, women love me. You can say anything you want. And that's the way it goes.
The last time Republicans tried this with all their silly, foolish stuff about rape, every one of those people who said those words was voted out of office. Women do not like this. We do think that there is a war on women when Republicans say stuff like this.
I want to read Jeff's letter only because I want to keep it fair here. Jeff writes, Alan, come on now. Hillary will say and do anything in capital letters to become president. Also, she parrots much of what Bernie Sanders has to say.
Gosh. Oh, come on. Again, Hillary, if she says everything that seems to emulate Bernie Sanders, she's a copycat. If she says something different, then, she's far away and she's not a progressive enough. She cannot win whatever she's doing.
But isn't that politics? I mean, isn't that what just the nature of a campaign that
yes.
people are going to say, if that is working for that candidate, then I'm going to try it?
Look,
I don't
look,
know. I'm
look,
not hearing
look,
Hillary
look,
out there
look.
Saying all men are, what is he called, bimbos, and, I don't like this
that
broadcaster because he's whatever the equivalent of a period would be for men. I can't think of what it would be. She's not saying divisive,
I don't know. There's a lot of Viagra
racist, misogynist stuff. She just is not doing that. That's different.
Okay, but look, take a look at every election that has been. You go to the left in the Democratic Party, you go to the right in the primary in the Republican Party. Now you got to capture the middle class. I've been preaching this over and over and over again. And they do switch. Of course they switch, because they know everything is important. Jeff was exactly right. You say what you can in order to win the general election, and that's a different group of voters.
So do you believe that he's truly inclusive, though?
Do I? No. Yeah. I have only one feeling about Donald Trump. He wants to win, and he will say and do what he has to say and do in order to win. Well, and so far, whether any of you like it or not, he's doing pretty well.
I think that he is playing right into Hillary's hand with all of this woman bashing. And the
I
proof
do too.
Of that today,
I agree fully.
Mm-hmm, the proof of that today to me is in her new campaign for money, which is give her money a certain amount and you get an official Hillary for America women card. It looks like a little credit card. Quite clever.
Very clever.
Well, come on now. You know what happens in these campaigns. It is clever, but there are different groups, and you play to each of the groups. So if it's a woman, you send out
the
woman.
Do you play to groups here? Or are you playing right versus wrong?
No. No, you're playing to groups. You're playing to electability. I'm so sorry. I don't want to be to break your bubble on all of this. But the name of the game is to win. You may remember the candidate with Robert Redford at the end after he's given up every piece of values he has. And he turns around after he's been elected and he says to the campaign manager, "What do we do now?" And the campaign manager looks at him and says, "What do you mean we?" It has nothing to do with right or wrong. It has to do with winning.
Are you explaining or are you extolling this?
No, you know, strategy. Very well. That is such a mean thing for you to say.
It's not mean. I'm trying to give you a chance to get about it because you're like laughing and it sounds like for a moment like this is really a good thing.
No, it is not a good thing. It's a terrible thing. And thank you for that opportunity to say it. But that's Alan the person talking. I'm just telling you how it works.
And any comparison between Robert Redford and Donald Trump is purely coincidental, right?
No. The comparison here is that in order to win, and that's why The Candidate was such a brilliant film, I recommend it to anybody, go get it on Netflix, is that it explained what happens when you have values and you have to give them up in order to win.
I just don't see how alienating more than half of the electorate is going to get you much of anywhere.
How's that? Why are you so sure it's half the electorate?
Because women are more than half the population, aren't they?
Look, I started the show 51%. I know it's now 53%, but you can't say that all of that 53% are of the same mind.
Alan, even if it's 20%, you're still talking about 30% of the electorate. How's that a good strategy?
What's on the other side?
I would err on the side of caution if I was dealing with 53% of the electorate. Yeah. I really would.
And let me also point out that not 50% of men think the other way. I mean, he's going to alienate a lot of men by attacking their mothers, their sisters, their wives, their daughters.
Right. That's all true, especially in my case. But how can you deny the fact that Trump, who you are deprecating the way that you guys are, is doing so well? I mean, somehow.
Well, I'll throw your own argument back at you. His audience right now is an extreme segment of the Republican Party.
I told you that. I already told you
that. Right. So that's why he's doing so well.
Well, yes. And then when he has to change his focus, he's got to change his focus. Guaranteed.
And he is not going to do so well, is what we're saying. When he does change his focus, he's going to have a different audience. And we do remember, and it isn't going to play well.
Well, from Alan,
you can't get on the stage and say, "Women love me. Look at me. What's not to love?" Which is what he's been doing over the last week, and have that work. I don't see that working.
Well, if you're Alan, the person you're saying, when you say, "Come the general election, you'll find out Donald Trump." If you're Alan the person, you say from your lips to God's ear. If you are Alan the political analyst or political scientist who is looking at his successes, I'm saying don't discount him.
And if you're Rob Chacon or Board Op, you're screaming at me because we're late for a break. So we'll do that, and we'll be right back after this. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We have a few minutes left and we want to end at least on the topics. with Kristen Griest, who is on course to become the first female Army officer trained to lead troops into combat. This is quite a story. She was among the first women to ever graduate from the Army's elite Ranger School, and after Thursday, she will become the first woman able to lead an infantry unit into combat. Her graduation from the Maneuver Captain's Career Course at Fort Benning, Georgia, qualifies her for duty as an infantry officer after being approved for infantry duty earlier this week. She is joining a branch of the Army that has long been considered the last bastion of traditionally male combat roles. And with the move, the Army has crossed another barrier in its promise to consider women for all roles without exception.
I love that the story came out on the same day that in the House Armed Forces Committee, a Republican from California introduced a bill requiring that women, along with men, register for the draft. And it was the guy who introduced this is firmly opposed to exactly what you're talking about, women in combat. He thinks that just gives ISIS a great advantage, doesn't like women in, doesn't think they can handle, and doesn't want them to handle the gore and the blood. He was defeated, however, by the rest of the committee, including 12 women on it, who said, you know what, we understand what you're doing. This is kind of a gotcha, but that's a good idea. Along with the full rights that we're demanding as women, there are full obligations, and that means fighting for your country at a time of danger, which is when a draft would come into play. And so they approved the measure. The guy who proposed it had to vote against it because, of course, he doesn't really like it at all, and now it goes to the full House. Women as full players in the armed forces is an idea long past the time. It's due, and we need it.
So I was almost wore another button today. I don't have a button on today, and that button said "Choose Peace."
Yeah,
and I guess I just have to say that although this this absolutely demonstrates how capable women are. And
yep.
You know, that we're not substandard men, that we can do, you know, whatever we put our minds to. This is an incredible individual as far as
her stamina,
her leadership, all of the things that go into being a leader, not just, you know, being physically, you know, combative or whatever. But the thing is, at the end of the day, I just find it kind of melancholy, not to say sad. That,
you know,
that's what it's about.
Here's my thinking on that. Mm-hmm. When our boys are subject to going to war, we become much more peace-loving. And our daughters, for the same thing. If sons and daughters are both, in danger of going to war, we're going to be a lot more careful about going to war. And that is why I think this is another reason I think this is a good idea. Not that I want war, not that I mm-hmm. want a big military, but if we're, it's a check. It's a mm-hmm. check on what the heck are we doing.
Mm-hmm.
Alan?
I think it's great. I mean, I think it's just great. Look, there are going to be risks involved in this. You know what's going to happen. The first time a woman is abused by the enemy, especially this particular
That's
enemy.
That's already happened.
Yeah,
sure.
Especially this particular enemy that we're looking at now, in order to frighten people. I just think, look, there are tremendous risks involved in all of this, but I think it's wonderful that she's been promoted this way and that she's gonna do what she has to do.
And what the point I'm making is, how wonderful is it that this many millennia after...
No, I hear you.
That,
I hear you
know, that's how humans yeah. solve conflict. We still solve Sad. Conflict by killing people and bombing,
well,
and
look,
bombing hospitals. You know,
look, but we have faced this in fire departments and police departments, and there are risks there, too. And it's terrible that we have such a criminal problem in the United States. But when it comes to the staffing of governmental agencies of any kind, it makes sense that everybody gets an equal break.
Well, we also are neglecting to say that the military is more than just war and combat. It's a tremendous economic opportunity for
sure.
a lot of people in our society, and women need to have access to that as well as men.
This spring, 13 female cadets were approved to enter armor, and 9 were approved for infantry. And, of course, all of this comes from out of the December 2015 declaration from Defense Secretary Ashton Carter announcing that the Pentagon would allow women in all military roles, with no exceptions, opening up about 220,000 military jobs, speaking to what you were just
right.
Yeah, and Luca wrote us and said, "Dear Roundtable, why are there wars? Men."
Yes.
Hard to argue that.
Essentialist thinking, huh? But probably accurate as far as history.
Yeah, I'm looking back. I guess Helen of Troy, she caused the war. But no, that was men being stupid about Helen of Troy. Yeah, it's men.
All right, Alan, we've got 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, Julius writes us and says, "Hey, guys, right? Alan's right. The only context for right and wrong in this election is whatever it takes to win." Bonnie says, "Note, panel, note, he, I guess that's Trump, love me, not that he loves women." Well, okay.
That's true.
"I'm with Alan on this," says Micah. "Maybe for slightly different reasons, I think Trump can count on people's often short memories of politics. Today he can attack women. In general election, he can say anything else. It will take a lot to keep people focused on what he said now. Look at how he attacked McCain and captured soldiers generally, but can still sell the idea he's the most patriotic candidate." And that, okay. And then thank you to Barbara from M. "Thank you for speaking so eloquently about women in the military. Choose peace is the answer we should all want to put forward. Nothing against the women in leadership roles. Just why do we wish to emulate war?" And then we heard from Mary, who said, "Hi, panel. There are many ways in which women are discriminated against the U.S. One of which is that elderly women, on average, receive less in Social Security than elderly men, because women's familial duties keep them from accruing as many work years as men." Catherine says, "No, that's a press release." "Remember, Bernie brothers, the same shoe, different foot. Sexism," says James. "Remember, Bernie bros, same shoe, different foot." Anybody get that one?
No.
No.
Me neither.
Okay.
Do it.
Well, we're out of time.
No.
Yes. But we are. But we thank everyone for writing in. By the way, the only thing, if the this weekend is the Washington Correspondents' Dinner. Mm-hmm. And there is a great article in the Washington Post, if you get a chance to read it, about President Obama's sense of humor,
mm-hmm.
which is really a fascinating article to take a look at, to keep in mind as we watch Larry Wilmore take over the helm of the White House Presidential Correspondents' Dinner.
Must see.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more Roundtable. Have a great weekend. Thanks.